come at this meeting. As indicated on the parliamentary program, it's a meeting with the AFC dealing with outstanding work that should have been done by the previous committee in the previous parliament, but we can't let it stay behind. We have to deal with it. In terms of our committee work, welcome also to Dr. Sitai and his team. The leadership is still the same. There were no recalls, so we're just making a joke. I want to request members that we must try and finish at the latest at 12:15. Try for 12 o'clock because myself and Honorable John is going to attend the political casting meeting on the money bills. That starts at 12:30 and V226. There's one apology. I received an apology from Honorable Bloom. He's attending a oversight visit as a member of the Select Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs to municipalities in the Free State. So he apologizes for all meetings for the rest of the week. It's a written apology. Can we accept it?
We accept the apology, Chair, even though that he has just gone home.
Yeah, he's only in Kronstadt. I don't know where they're going in the Free State, but okay. We accept the apology. Thank you for that. Honourable members, that brings us to point three. The reports from the FFC, and I want to ask Dr. Sitai to start the ball rolling. We've got two documents that were given to us this morning. One is a report on the 06-07 year, and the other one is on the 7-08. So you must have two documents in front of you. That's the presentations that will be done. That was a document that was circulated to us prior to this meeting. Is a written responses to the matters and issues raised by the Select Committee on Finance on the 11th October 2007, it being the occasion of the presentation of the FFC's 2006-2007 annual report to Parliament. This document. Do you have it? Can we get the indication? Because there will be referrals to this. You must have it in front of you. It was. Yeah. Make sure that you've got all the relevant documentation with you. Dr. Sitai, over to you. And welcome again.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Before I start, to my left is our Commission Secretary, Mashumi Mzaidu. And then to my right, it's Mavuso Vukwana, he's our CFO. And then on the other side is Henry Ekstein, he is the liaison officer, his office here in Cape Town. I am Bethuel Sitai. So let me thank you, Chairman, for making the time. We do realize that this report ought to have been finished a long time ago, but I think it was sort of, it fell into the elections and it just couldn't be, be closed, so to speak. But I would like to start off by saying the 2006-2007 annual report was actually presented to the last committee, and after we presented it, the committee then, Chair, they were a bit hard to with us because what happened was we had made notes on our own, carrying our own notes. And then they said, no, we must present to them things that are written. And that is why the questions had to arise, because they said, okay, the questions we are asking, we'll just ask them. Don't tell us what they are. Just go back and write them. So we went back to write them, and that really, that was the issue at the time. But otherwise, in terms of what we presented and so forth, we were able to engage on those rights. Even the past chairman indicated that he personally, as chairman, he was satisfied with our answers, but he needed to sit down with the committee for them to collectively say, yes, this is fine. But then that time was never there, and then things changed. Now, so for that reason, I think with the chairman's indulgence, I'll just be attempting to highlight what is in this report, the 2006-2007. In page 2, it just outlines the contents of the document, and page 3 goes over our constitutional mandate, which I think you know, it's fairly well known, and then table 4 goes through the legislative mandate, and then page 5 goes through the performance against our objectives, and I think these are fairly clear. They touch on governance and accountability, stakeholder relations, things that at the time some were ongoing, and others, of course, we needed to work on and so forth. But if we move on, page 6 as well, because I'm just highlighting, these are, you know, also the KPIs and the targets that we have met. And then when we go to page 7, for example, recommendations on the division of revenue, commentary on the division of revenue bill, ad hoc advisories. These are things that we do all the time. And that's why we say achieve, because in the end, these are the documents that we end up including in our submission document and also in the division of revenue document. We move on to page 10, and in page 10 as well, it basically highlights the recommendations, and these again have moved on and been accepted and been processed through other fora in cabinet. I'm sorry, in the legislature, parliament. Page 12 as well, you know, ends the recommendations. And then when we come to page 14, there we are highlighting the strategy and business planning of the FSC. We had to do this because this sort of was a period when I came in as chairman of the FFC, and we needed to make sure that we have our strategy and business planning in place, because this was required not only by the Auditor General, but we needed also to share what we're doing with Parliament. And we go on page 15, highlight some of these things that we're doing. For example, issue of systems became very important in terms of what we're doing, budgeting, capacity building, and so forth. So we move on with that. We move on up to page 18 now, just indicating our business and planning. Page 19, and so forth. So I think, you know, if you look and scrutinize the strategy and business planning, you will realize that we had to do what we have done here because we were really making FFC more formal, be more formally run, and have predictable rules, and comply with the legislation of government as well, because otherwise we couldn't really be using public money but having informal structures and so forth. So this is why we have this. Now, we also then go on to page 21, monies, you know, that we have had to spend for all these requests, and indicate that somewhere during this reporting period, we did run into a deficit, which we were able to explain. We reported on it, we were able to explain it, and for example, on page 22, we show some of these items that we say led to the deficit. And I think from here on, Chair, I'll ask our CFO to just go through these financial tables.
Thanks, Chair. I think Dr. Mtai has given the full background of what has been happening in 2006-07 financially, and basically this indicating that it was a time where he just joined the FFC and he wanted to have a better delivery model, and how do we engage ourselves towards ensuring that the mandate of the FFC is being fulfilled. And one of the things that he looked at was towards capacitating of FFC with the right resources, especially the resources from the core business functions, which is the research and recommendation functions, to make sure that the mandate of the FFC is being met. This is just a highlight of where the major cost of the FFC goes through. As well, our FFC is more a human resource-based institution. We use most of our money to the personnel cost. Personnel costs are the key cost drivers of the FFC. And how FFC is made up is made up of the RRP. RRP is called Research and Recommendation Program, which is a major consumer of our costs. If you can see there on the slide on page 24, it consumes 40% of those costs. And then that is followed by the support services. Support services is a secretariat that supports the research and recommendation. And then we've got executives. Executives includes both executives, and also we've got full-time commissioners, which is a chair and a deputy chair, and also the non-executive commissioners, which are part-time commissioners. And then following that, going down, and then I think it would be important to know exactly the kind of divisions that we have, how that money is being spread along those divisions. Under research and recommendations, we've got the budget analysis unit, which consumes 7% of the budget. The major cost driver in that unit is fiscal policy unit, which consumes 23% of that budget. And then we've got data and information, which consumes 7%, and macroeconomics, which consumes 7%. And then we've got small divisions that are less than, consume a little bit, not even 1% of that, like stakeholder relationships. We've got human resource, our IT, the finance, you could see there is 9%, and then we've got our parliamentary liaison office, which is based in Cape Town, which consumed around about 6%. If you go down to 26%, I mean page 26, you will see that on that particular year, how the recruitment costed, we had to be certain areas like the budget analysis, because there were requests from parliament in that particular year that they had to meet FFC, and then we had to capacitate that unit, and you could see it was 25%. And then we also have macro and economic public finance unit, where you also have to capacitate, and then we have data and information unit also. And then in terms of also reorganization, you have to reorganize the FFC model. As Dr. Stai has highlighted, that one of the things was to start with the strategic plan for the office, look at the overview, we look at how the support services should deliver that model, and then there was stakeholder relations that needs to be beefed up there. We also had to look at the issues of internship, because we had a problem of turnover rate, especially on the research unit, and then we have to recruit more young people to train and to capacitate them in the research field that we are doing. And then also one of the challenges that we had in that year were the resignations that we have. Most of the people were consumed also by the public sector, various departments like National Treasury and so on. That, and then we had some resignations there in those areas. 15% showed it was a fiscal policy unit and data and information unit. It was a year that things were really turning down in the FFC. I think one of the challenges that we had, especially in that year, were the budget constraints that we were facing. That depicts what was happening in terms of the staff turnover. And then also we had to give the details. It was very important to know where by the job seekers in terms of the salaries, where are they going to. 48% of our salaries in FFC, they just go to general staff. And then 19% they go to senior management, and then junior management 7%. We've got 25% and 1% to the interns. The also management risk that the FFC we were facing in that year, I've highlighted one of them was the financial risk that we have, the budget constraints that we have at that point in time, and then the staff turnover rate was one of the issues that we have, and then one of the things that we did, we established, we came up with policy and strategies like remuneration strategy, how to make ourselves to be more competitive, also to be within our budget. We looked at the issues of remuneration policy, the retention policy, and also how to customize our pay skills. Those are the things that we do in terms of trying to address those risks. And then there was also a regrading exercise to bring all the positions in line with the newly developed remuneration strategy and the retention policy, because I think it was one of the issues that were asked by Parliament at that point in time. What are we doing in terms of addressing and retaining the staff that we have? And also there were issues of gender equity issues, especially at senior management level, that we were asked to address, and one of the things we have tried to address, we started especially with the capacitating the research unit, where we tried to put more people, women in that level, and also addressing at some of the senior management staff to put more women there. And then these were also all the risks. I won't go into details of those risks on page 32, and there were the end of the finances, and we get an overall, it was an unqualified audit report in 2006 and 2007. However, at that point in time, Auditor General raised an issue of going concern as a matter of emphasis, but that was also addressed in the following year with the help of, I think, the Parliament and also National Treasury. We got an injection of 7 million to address that in the following year. I think that's the end of the presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thanks very much. So, Chair, in page 35, we just conclude by saying that the format and extent of the report has changed to reflect not only what past strategies, plans, and budgets have achieved and not achieved, but also to give stakeholders an informed view of how the FSC intends to generate and deliver optimal value going forward. Bring it more in line with the requirements of the Auditor General and National Treasury regarding the reporting. So, Chair, thanks very much.
Thank you. excuse me. Thank you, Dr. Sitai. Of the members, we received also then the responses from the FFC to the questions that were raised by the previous committee in the previous parliament. This is this document I referred to. Now, this was circulated to us prior to this meeting. I went through this document, and I went through the annual report that was presented to this committee last year. And between this report and this one, there was improvement, because that's how you get a correlation. What happened and what was the road? What was the roadmap? Was the improvement? Did things deteriorate? So that is my remark regarding the information that I had in front of me as chairperson.
inputs from committee members, questions?
I'm just going to go through the presentation quickly. I've flagged a few things. Obviously, the benefits of dealing with the report that's so old is, like you say, we can assess the actual outcomes, because by now you should have fixed the problem. Just starting on page 7, and this is, I guess, a general principle of my thinking on the FFC, is that you've been established as an objective body that provides objective advice to the structures of government. And I would imagine your performance against objectives on page 7 should include, or potentially, sorry, on page 10 actually, either the performance against objectives or perhaps the more detailed submission analysis on page 10 needs to include a column which says, was your recommendation adopted or not? You know, to me, that's actually, if you tick the box on whether the FFC submitted a recommendation, that's one thing, and obviously we would expect you to do that. But the important thing is an analysis of how much of what you recommend is being implemented, because that really judges the effectiveness of the FFC. So I'd like to hear the team's comments on that, and the potential to include something like that in future reporting. And then, I'm slightly confused by the reporting on finances on page 21 to 23. It is a bit of, I mean, maybe I'm being slow today, but it's not very clearly reported, which is quite alarming for a body like the FFC. You're talking about a deficit here, but I can't see, for example, the slide on page 22 is titled deficit, and then it's got a breakdown of all of the cost base. If the financial team can just go through, again, page 21, 22, and 23, and point out to me the key facts and where I can see how the deficit emerged. It's not very clear. And then going on page, just in general, the acronyms used in the slides on page 24, 25, and 26 are quite confusing. It would be useful if in future you could just write out the acronyms, because we don't know what RRP or EMD means. I see that there's an interesting dynamic happening between slide 26 and slide 28, which is the new recruits and then the new hires. Obviously, you do talk about the turnover, but you've got 47% of your executive were new recruits in this year on page 26, and in the same year, 47% resigned. That's a huge turnover. If you could just tackle that issue of executive turnover and how the situation is now. And I think that's it, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. On page number 6, the senior management of equity. I'm seeing that now you are saying on the performance results that not achieved. And then when you go to female, she said difficult to...
Sorry, Chair. Can I hear the question again?
Please repeat the question.
Yeah, I'm still explaining what is written here. Then I will come with the question. If you check at page number 6, it talks about the employment equity, senior management, if you can see on page 6. And then you are saying the actual is 86%, but I'm seeing there on the result is written not achieved. Then you go to female underneath, which is 40%. The result is difficult to source stability and for a qualified female. Do you think if this or a problem are happening, are you ever to achieve the result as required by the law? Thank you.
you, Umba Makbela. Any other? Umba Mashile?
The same chairperson, I'm a little bit just decapacitated. But to respond to the documents that are in front of me, of course, is that on the same page 6 that Honorable Makubela is referring to, I'm not sure whether it's a mistake, because you still have the female as 40% and the male as 86. Probably those numbers are supposed to add to 100. So maybe there is an explanation for it. And then on the strategy, I think page 17, if I will go there. Yeah, quality assurance. I just need to understand whether this particular situation has changed. Because I think it looks like what you picked up during your study in business planning, you came to a conclusion that you don't have the capability for quality assurance, what that means, and how that impact FSC, and how are you turning it around? Or how have you turned it around? Because now we're talking about an old age report. Then on the finances, page 2-3, I think. I'm sorry, because I like numbers, unfortunately. There is RSC levy. Still being reflected in the 2007. I'm not sure, because this particular cost line, I think it has been scrapped. I'm not sure when it was scrapped, but it was scrapped, that we don't need to pay it anymore. And then the question now is whether that number is correct, that is sitting there, or it is area payments, or what's the story. Then the other thing is the cost of staff, especially moving from 2006 to 2007, because you are reflecting that you had a change of 51%. And given this other explanation that you have some top executives that came in, and then but you fired others, or maybe they have just decided to walk out, but how did it eventually end up in that? Or maybe it was just simply a re-evaluation of staff packages, or does it reflect new recruits that amounted to more than 50% of the existing staff, if one can just get that particular explanation. I think those are the few questions, except that the document which we're talking about, the written responses to matters and issues raised by the Senate Committee in the past, the very first point as well, where they're actually talking against the appointment of a commissioner to head the Audit Committee. I just need an explanation. What were the arguments? What were the debates of the members of parliament? I can see the response that is here, but if I know that those debates actually, whether they were querying its objectivity, if it is headed by the commissioner who's part of the whole commission, or its independence, and then it will give me a different view of understanding what the response is there.
Doctor, you may reply.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'll ask the land managers to start, and I'll pick up whatever they don't answer later.
Thank you, Chairperson. Starting with the Audit Committee, Chairperson, Commissioner Martin Kuskus, part-time commissioner, was the chairperson of our audit committee at that time. He was not in the full-time employ of the commission, and the commission, based on what the Financial and Fiscal Commission had said, had appointed him as the audit committee chairperson. The Act actually says that all commission committees have to be chaired by a commissioner. Now, the Select Committee at that time was not comfortable that Commissioner Kuskus would have the type of independent mind that would be required for somebody heading an audit committee. But we, in the following year, addressed that. Commissioner Kuskus stepped down as chairman of the audit committee, and Mr. Jerry Sitole, who is not a commissioner, who is not in the employ of the commission, was subsequently appointed as chairperson of the audit committee. He still chairs that committee at this particular point in time. And what we have since done, in addition, is we've appointed one additional independent member to that committee, so that at this particular point in time, we have two commissioners sitting in the audit committee, both of them part-time, and two independent individuals, not commissioners and not in the employ of the commission, who sit on that committee. And the chairperson, of course, of the commission, deputy chairperson, and all other commission executives only come to the committee by invitation. So they are invited to sit in that committee, okay, but they are not members of that committee. So at this particular point in time, I believe the commission is of the view that that committee, okay, has responded to the concerns of the select committee as it was at that time. And that committee is fully independent as well. On the subject of the implementation of the commission's recommendations, we one of the problems that the commission has experienced is that when government accepts our recommendations, what usually happens is that they inform us that the resources needed for the implementation of those recommendations will be forthcoming in the next 2, 3, or 4 years. So if we were to report on the implementation of the recommendations that we actually report on in that particular annual report, we'll be looking at something that happened perhaps 2 or 3 years ago. And I think that is usually reflected in the response that government submits in the form of Annexure E to the Division of Revenue as to what they intend to do those of our recommendations that they've actually implemented. But it is quite true that it may be necessary for the Commission going forward to actively monitor the implementation of its recommendations and to find a way of actually, apart from the annual report itself, reporting to Parliament about the state of implementation of those recommendations.
The way I understood the question was that we should immediately just in this table indicate accepted, not accepted, and so forth. Now that I think we can do in our next report for the submission of now. Yeah, right. Okay. Right.
And just to add on that, what we have done in later reports is that we set out government's response, which talks about acceptance fully in the annual report itself. So whatever recommendations is made, government will give an indication about the fact that they've actually accepted that particular recommendation, or accepted it with reservations, or completely rejected it.
Let me just also comment. Chair, we so far don't have a mandate now to follow, you know, to follow to see whether Province X has put in, has budgeted, you know, for that. We are battling with those. We are increasing our capacity. But again, it's a situation where we must reach some protocol with oversight committees, because we are not supposed to be seen to be doing oversight. But we just myself to see professionally how far we can trace the budgets of provinces to see if in fact they are putting into their budgets what Treasury has passed on to them.
In the context of quality assurance, when we did our review of our strategy in 2006, one of the things that we were concerned about was the fact that we actually do research, and we didn't have systems, as it were, in place to make sure that if we borrow ideas or thoughts or information from sources outside of the Financial and Fiscal Commission, we do in fact attribute those sources. We do in fact state that this was sourced from such and such a publication, and the author of that publication, so and so. And of course, use the standard quotation marks, okay, for that type of thing. That's one of the things that we found when we got to the Commission. But since then, okay, we've done some work in ensuring that we do not incorrectly quote people. One of the things that we've bought is what is called Authenticate. Authenticate is a software program that checks every single document that has been prepared by our researchers to make sure that, one, it's original, and two, where material is borrowed from a source, that source is correctly attributed, okay, with that. So in terms of quality control, okay, I think that has been fully addressed at the end of the day. Employment equity. On the subject of employment equity, one of the problems that we've been having is that what the Commission does is a specialized field. It's, you don't go to university, okay, and study what the Financial and Fiscal Commission does. You may be an economist, okay, but you may not necessarily qualify to do the type of work that the Commission does. So what has been happening is that from way back, 15 years ago, the Commission has been training people to do the type of work that it does. And the type of skills that we develop as a Commission, okay, are in demand by government. And what simply happens when government comes with a better financial offer for people that we've trained, people that we've recruited, of course they leave. Not that there's anything wrong with the work that we do, but because I suppose money is more attractive, okay, than you know, the challenges, as it were, that people have to deal with, okay, in the Commission. So as a result, we've been having very, very high turnover rates. We have, in the past 2-3 years, been trying to address that. And in particular, and I think we reported this last year late when we dealt with our 2008-2009 annual report, we've actually aligned ourselves with the public service remuneration scale, because a lot of the people who leave us for the public service. So to that extent, we've sort of stemmed the flow, okay, of people leaving the Financial and Fiscal Commission for the public service. The other thing, of course, is that there are very few females, okay, out there who do this type of work. And it has been a challenge, basically, for the Commission, okay, to get females on board, okay, at senior management levels and even at lower levels. But what we've since done is we've adopted as a strategy targeted recruitment of particular females to join the FSC so that we can address the issues of gender balance. I don't know whether members saw Lydia Ndenga, who just joined us in January. She's part of a targeted recruitment exercise, okay, to sort of address those issues of gender balance within the Commission.
fact, even last week we had a different female as well. We really are working very hard, and I think our subsequent reporting will show that we're working very hard at that. We are under pressure all around wherever we go. The term used is gender, and really we are doing that. Not necessarily that simple, but we are really working hard. So we'll show that. Yes. Yeah.
And regarding RSC levels, okay, at the time of reporting, RSC levels were in the process of being phased out. So they were still being paid, and that is what we're reporting on. Right. I think the deadline, and the CFO will correct me, okay, was the July 2006 or 7 for stopping the payment of RSC levels.
Thanks for explaining that. I think it came the date where the RSC levels were stopped was during the runabout June in that particular year. Then it affected the report of that year. Like you could see, the money that we paid, it was far less than we used to pay in the previous year. I think that what affected you, that decline, what was the cause of it. But it's what he has been explaining. I think coming to the response to the question that were financially related, I think I'll tackle both page 22 and 23 at the same time because most of the questions are coming there. I think as one honourable member asked that the details of this page 22 just highlight the details of the figures in page 22. What were the major pressures that caused that deficit? We have just highlighted the details. I think if we could look maybe on item number 14 and 15 on page 22, which are at the top on page 23, which are our audit fees. I think the audit fees have went up for the organization quite a lot. It has been one of our challenges. You could see the jump in 2006 to 2007 from 307 to 534,000 on audit fees. And those are obligatory fees, and we don't have control of those fees. But we have highlighted that with Auditor General and also National Treasury, even the current chairperson is trying the level best to address. We've got a meeting, it was scheduled for March, on the 5th of March, with Accountant General. One of the issues is to address the audit fees. Because if you look at the budget that we have, the audit fees, they consume almost 5% of our total budget, which is far much higher compared to other institutions. And we don't have complicated financial issues. If you would look, our financial accounting is just a straightforward accounting. It's one of the things that the current chairperson is also trying to address.
Sorry, CFO. We probably must also indicate that these fees are set by the Treasury so that, as the CFO is saying, it's not because we have dirty documents and they have a lot of work to do and so forth. They just come already knowing that they are going to get a certain amount of money out of us. And that is the issue that we need to negotiate with the Treasury to indicate the unfairness of the whole thing. So we hope that we'll be able to convince them.
Also, on that particular year, what causes also the jump was around the devolution of budget and introduction of accommodation charges. In that year, there was our rental. We were paid directly by the public works. But in the following year, 2006-07, we have to pay our rental directly. And then there were no funds that were devolved from either treasure or public works directly to FFC. We have to see it within our budget that those issues are addressed. Those are some of the negotiations that we had in treasure, and treasury had to give us that additional funding in the following year to address those issues. That has been highlighted on as item number 2 on our expenditure schedule around deficit issues. And also, there were also requests around the commission. If you look, there's an item on page 23, it's called commission research. That is a research that we do in FFC. There was a jump from 1.9 to 2.7. You'll see the details on page 22. On item number 1, there were budget analysis. That's why all the figures, those areas, they've went out quite a bit. And then coming also to the staff cost, that jumped from 7.3 to 11.1. And also I link that to the question that was asked around the executive cost that went up. If you remember that, as Dr. Stiles highlighted, the new leadership commissioner came into place, and then there was a revaluation of their remuneration. The commission that we have, they were paid at chief director level, most of them. And then we had initial pressure together with the DPSA, with the coming of the new commissioners in place. They have to uplift some of them to the DDG level. This is why you see that jump at the executive level. It's one of the reasons that it was because of the revolution of the commission salaries. And then also answering the question of the honorable member around the acronyms, I think in future we'll address and make sure that those acronyms we explain to them. Okay, just to explain to you, like, the RRP is our research and recommendation program, and the EMT is executive management area where all the executive expenses of the FSC have been grouped in one area. I think this request was asked by the previous members of parliament just to see how the personnel costs are being spread within the FSC. The HR is our human resource, and then the IT is the information technology, and KLMC is our knowledge management center, which involves the library center that the researchers are using at FSC, and also document management that we also used. I think from the finance, those were the questions, unless I'm missing someone.
Thank you. In this document that you submitted last in the annual report, there's a page, appendix B, with all the abbreviations and acronyms that you, in future, in your presentation, also add a page like that to make it a bit easier to follow. All the members, any follow-ups or time, we must check our time, please.
Thanks, Chairman. On the audit committee, as you're saying that you have now appointed a non-commissioner, have we amended that particular legislation which informed you that the chairs must be commissioners? Have that been amended accordingly to actually assist you to satisfy the members of parliament? And the other one I just wanted to know is in terms of audit fees that you are crying about, are you barred from utilizing private audit firms? And if not, then why don't we enter the competitive area of utilizing those that are cheaper than the government one? I'm sure is the Auditor General, I'm sure, that you're referring to. Thanks, Chairperson. And maybe from the finances, on the very same page 23, there is one big item there of 705,000, general repairs and office maintenance. And it looks like this amount is very huge, and I'm not sure whether there's an explanation to it when you are having a lot of rental office equipment. And what is there that you can have almost close to a million in terms of maintenance? Generally, in the FSC's procurement system, are you happy that you don't have fraudulent activities happening? That's all I'm just asking. Thanks.
Questions. Can I just confirm, page 23 is your total expenditure? Top level. Okay. Page 22 is just a selection of expenditure. Can I suggest that it's quite confusing? increasingly, I mean, it's very difficult for us to work out how the two tables interact. But I do, now I understand what you were trying to do. Then three quick questions. On page 23, I don't understand the difference between staff costs and commission research, unless commission research is research that your staff couldn't do and you had to commission it from third parties. Is that the case? Okay. And then what I'd like is just a comment on whether that is a standing arrangement or whether then you would start to hire staff that could do that kind of research or whether you would always have third-party researchers. Page 22, you may have explained this, but there's R1 million put down for what seems to be a rental. Can you explain that? And then lastly, on page 21, under budgeted items, the bottom block on that table, it appears that you under-budgeted the executive commissioner remuneration. Surely, in terms of your cost, that is one cost that you can plan for and budget properly without going over budget. There's no degree of variability in that, as far as I know. So can you explain that? Thank you.
Okay. I think starting with the last question, with regards to the commissioners, even if you budget, like, the salaries of the commissioners are not determined within the SFC. We normally get the present minutes, like I've highlighted earlier on, that saying that these are the commissioners that have been appointed and these are the salaries that will be paid for that particular year. And then coming to...
indicate that there's a rider also that they must be paid from our executive budget.
Not from in, and then from if we run... sort of budget when we request for more funding, but we immediately when we get that minute, we have to implement it. And then also coming to the other question, I will address in future the link between the schedule on 22 and 23. But it was just the highlight of the one of the things on number two, as explained earlier on, the devolution of budget from, as I had our rental for the office, it used to be paid directly by the public works, but to the service providers. And now with that change, that the devolution of funds department, and we had to pay our own rental by ourselves, but there were no funds that were transferred to our budget to cater that expense. That is the cause of that. And then coming to the question that was raised by honorable member of the general repairs and office maintenance. I think one of the areas that we had old equipment that we couldn't buy new equipment with the existing budget that we have. We have to maintain that equipment. The maintenance costs went high, and if we also looked in item 12 on page 22, we have to upgrade our security system because of the servers that we have, and also the kind of information that FSC has at that point in time. There was some upgrade of the security system, and also even the people that are coming in and out of that tax service provider was upgrading that particular system. And in terms of our procurement system, we've got a very tight procurement internal control systems in place. We're making sure that we don't have a history of any fraudulent activities that have taken place in FFC around the procurement issues. And also, we're making sure that we follow all those lines. But the only problem that we have is the capacity of people within the FFC itself for some of the things, because we have to follow what the Auditor General is saying in National Treasury, that we have to have a separate procurement unit, and then all those, but the capacity of FSC doesn't allow some point in time, but we make sure that we are within the lines of the procurement system. Coming to the issue of the Auditor General, can we look at the private sector? FSC, we fall under Schedule 1 of the PFMA, which is the request that the people that should audit at is Auditor General. We don't have that option of looking at the private sector, I think the chairperson was one of the issues that he raised, because he's also serving at the board of other institutions where he's saying the audit fees are far much less than what we are paying. But in essence, out of the staff complement of over 22,000 people, but the audit fee that they pay, they are being audited by the external auditors from the private sector. But this is the kind of challenges that we are facing.
The honourable member sees about legislation. One of the things that we raised with the select committee at that time was the fact that by insisting that we appoint an independent person as chairperson of the audit committee, we'll be acting in fact in contravention of the provisions of the FSC Act, which says that committee chairperson should be commissioned, as it were. We never got a response to that, and unfortunately the legislation has still not been amended. So technically we are in contravention, okay, of our own act. But that's simply because at that time it was insisted that we cannot have a commissioner. Though that commissioner is part-time, is not in the full-time employ of the commission as chairperson of the committee. So you are quite right. We are in contravention, okay, of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act.
Can it be now in the hands of FSC together with whoever to ensure that we correct that legislation? Because, I mean, we can't create legislation that actually establishes you, but we contravene it. Yeah, the arguments of the, you know, it's of an intention to have an independent chair. I mean, it is, it's accepted and it is welcomed by everybody who wants a clean. But then we must make sure that the legislation also supports that. And I don't think we can see it with that chair of FSC without making an attempt to correct it.
Remember, I think that point is also in that response, okay, that we filed with the committee at that time, that we are being instructed to act in contravention, okay, of the legislation.
We'll capture it in our committee report. Honourable members, yes, we've got less than 60 minutes for the next report and another point on the agenda regarding our oversight. Dr. Satai gave me information in terms of a letter regarding a question we asked when we dealt with the annual report 2008-2009 last year. On the 2nd of November, Dr. Satai wrote me a letter regarding the interaction between provinces and the FSC. Dating back to 2005, that falls into the annual report period we're dealing with now, there were six provinces that did not have any interaction with the FSC. And then I wrote a letter to the chairperson of the NCOP, Honorable Mushlangu, with this letter added of the FSC, and the chairperson wrote the provinces to the speakers to sensitize the provinces and the speakers about their role and the interaction with the FSC. So I just want to report back, the committee did a follow-up on this, and in the Northern Cape they're looking at the date to get a meeting with the FSC, because the Northern Cape is one of the culprits. That doesn't do what they were supposed to do. I just wanted to inform the committee on that. Doctor, you made a remark. The FSC hasn't got insight into the spending of provinces. I don't know if I captured it correct. Do you get, as the FSC, the reports from Treasury on a quarterly basis regarding the spending by provinces and municipalities?
Yes, sir. We have, you know, all the information. What I was really saying was that when our submission is accepted, we haven't extended ourselves to then go into Province X and say the recommendation on HIV was accepted. Is there any change in the way now you are using funds for HIV or funds for new bridges, funds for infrastructure? You know, we haven't extended that far yet. But we are increasing our capacity on budget analysis, and we hope that when we get to agree as a commission, we will then say, yes, we must do that now. information we have.
So, also going back to our November meeting, as I indicated, when we will deal with provinces, when we deal with departments, when we deal with municipalities, we will inform the FFC what we are doing, and if they want to link up with us, they are welcome to attend those meetings, so we can facilitate that. Honourable members, that brings us to the end of this report. The second one is 2007-2008.
Just a quick question. We've got, and it's taken me a while to get to it, but we've got this written responses document for the 2006-07.
Yes.
Two quick questions. Do we have a version of this for the 2007 Act? And if there's already a written responses to the committee on 2006-07, then why did we just do the 2006-07 again? Because obviously the last previous committee did it.
Well, they didn't complete their work. We're now completing what should have been done then.
So the process is
we're actually doing it over again.
Then the committee comes back with another
report. Okay. Unfortunately, all our members are new members in this committee. There's no one that came from the previous committee. So we are a bit disadvantaged in that sense.
Let me just also say, if you allow me, it won't always be like that. When I started, I indicated that the last committee, I happened to report reading notes. Then they said, no, we don't want you to read notes. We want to respond to what is written. Right. So then we accepted the questions. We answered those that we could, but then they said, go back and put it all in writing. That's really what happened. Yeah. That brings us to the 2007-2008 report. Am I correct? We've got 45 minutes, and we must have questions as well. So if you could zoom into the specific issues in a business-like form, then we can finish.
So thanks, Jan. I think this one will be shorter than the previous one. Page 1 introduces the report 2007 and 2008, and then page 2 just goes through the mandate. Most important, we highlighting the division of revenue among the three spheres of government and any other financial and fiscal matters. That's what we. Then we have enabling legislations. And they are all indicated there. And then we highlight the achievements for the period, and these, of course, are the usual in a sense because of the division of revenue. We have the bill itself. We have public finance management bill and the other. Highlight there. And then on page number 5, we continue with the highlights. Now, this one's on page number 5. They are actually research tools that we have available. They are computerized, and this we are also sharing with other people. And then we continue in terms of stakeholder. Some provinces are actually calling us to share some of these tools with. So when you see stakeholder advisories, free state, provincial government, we are training some people in the treasury there, and KwaZulu-Natal as well. We get visitors from Africa as well, assistance to other African countries on intergovernmental fiscal relations. A lot of countries are interested to see how our intergovernmental relations work. We'll report in our next reporting that, in fact, last week we had people, on Monday, we had a delegation from Malawi as well, who had come to see how we do things. We'll also be reporting that we have had even visitors from Uganda who have come on an extended visit. We give them room in our offices, and we interact because they also want to know how we're doing things. We've been to Rwanda.
Rwanda paid for by the Treasury, because we cannot use FFC money. Our mandate does not allow us to, you know, to use our budget to fly out to other places. But if people pay for us, we consider that. But so far it's been through the Treasury. Right? And then we have a number of publications from commissioners and research staff, which also are giving us a lot of recognition in our environment. And I think in our next report, we'll talk about UNICEF, collaborative research that we're doing with UNICEF on child poverty and so forth. You know, we tend to accept things that we think are relevant to our mandate. We just don't do any other thing that is not relevant to our mandate. Right? I think in our last report, we talked about critical skills flight. We know that this is really an ongoing issue. And then compliance, budget constraints, impact on rolling out strategies around compliance with a myriad of legislation. In other words, there's a lot of legislation that require that we comply and so forth. So in the beginning, we actually had a lot of difficulties because this compliance mechanism measures were not there, and we had to really convince Treasury that we must spend on this. And we're even amazed that they are very compliant, but they were very tough agreeing with us having to use money there. But I think it's okay now. We are moving fine. And then the commission, there we highlight the terms of the commissioners and so forth. Basically, these commissioners are appointed on their expertise. So we don't really go and looking for our cousins and so on. You know, it must be people who are well knowledgeable. But again, the appointment of these people is done through the president's office and is coordinated through the Treasury. And then I'll move on to page number 9 as well. I think I need to highlight the point that stakeholder relations is one aspect that we are really working hard to rev up. And then page number 10 highlights the compliance that we have gone through. And then page number 11 is basically the policies that we are putting into place that for a long time were not necessarily in place. And so goes page number 12. And then page number 13 touches on the financials. CFO, can you go on page number 13, please, and then just highlight quickly.
Also, in 2007 and 2008, Chair, we had an unqualified audit report from the Auditor General, and there were not even no matter of emphasis in that year. I think we're the only constitutional institution that gets that clean audit report from that year. This is just how the budget for 2007 and 2008 was. We had an approved allocation of 20 million and also some foreign donation that we received. Normally they go towards our commission research. We normally use those donor funding for those particular purposes. And then we got an adjustment that indicated in the previous report to address the deficit that we have. We get an adjustment of 7.3 million from the National Treasurer to help us to address that deficit. It gives us the total revenue of 27.9 million. And then these were the financial performance in that particular year. One of the things we could see that there was an increase in our revenue by 25.3%. One of the issues there was clear the deficit that we had in the prior year that I've talked about in the previous report, and also the inflation-linked adjustment and the reservation payout that we have to staff members because of, you know, leave that have been accumulated and so on. And then also the assets that we acquired, that we had acquired, because as I indicated, we're paying a lot of money on computer maintenance. And then we had to acquire some of the assets in that particular year. Also, you see, even in this year, the audit fees is also one of the challenges. It keeps on coming every year. We also, if you look, the operating expenses for that particular year, they went down by 27.3. One of the reasons was that given that we had a limited budget, we had to put the austerity measures to deal with the challenges that we have so that there's no wastage and unauthorized expenditure within the finance of the FFC. You could see 14.8% in depreciations because of that. And then also on the liability side, there was a decline on that. Our cash flow for that year was quite positive because of the additional funding that we received from Treasury. In terms of the remuneration split, sorry, honorable members about the OCRO name, but the CS is the commission services, all the commission expenses, they normally go there. And then SS is the support services. This duplicates even the headcount, the number of people that are there. RFP is our research and recommendation program, which you could see is a major cost driver for the whole of FSC. And then in terms of the allocation of our budget and how we have been requesting funds, you could see starting from 2008-09, these have been our budget allocation, 23.1, and then we requested 29 million. We got that amount, 24 in 2009 and 10. We requested 36 and then 25 in 10-11, we requested 31. But I must say that through the engagement that we have with the Treasury and other departments, because one of the things that we highlighted was when they look at the personal costs, they thought they are high, but when they look at actually what we pay to our people, they find out it's quite much lower than even other government departments are paying. And then we had to benchmark ourselves. We helped also by the National Treasury and DPSA to make sure that as part of the retention of our staff members, we benchmark ourselves within the public sector, because that's where most of our staff are going. And this year, going forward, we did get a 19% increase in our allocation from Treasury. If you could see our budget was around about, for 2010-11, it was around about 26 million, if I round it off. We requested 40 million, but we get an increase of 5 million, which now our allocation is sitting at 31 million for the new year starting in April, which is also a positive thing to us, because we'll be able to address some of the issues, especially things like the audit fees that we have highlighted and some of the pressures that have been coming, rolling over from the previous years. And in terms of the drivers for change in the baseline that we have requested, this 19% that I said was to make a retention and attraction of skills in the RRP, which is our research and recommendation program, and also stakeholder management and liaison. I think our deputy chair has talked about that. And also, I've highlighted in the previous year the increasing in terms of participation of non-full-time commissioners within the commission's work, financing all the research projects. And I've talked about the revamping and upgrading of our IT systems, which has been our major problem. As one of the honorable members has been able to point it out in terms of the computer maintenance that they've been paying. I've talked about also the rental of our premises. Also, our chair talked about compliance issues that we have to comply. They don't take the size of the budget, but if there's everything that you need to comply with, we have to do that as part of the government. I think that's the end, Chair, for the
question. Chair, thank you very much. Thank you to Dr. Shita and his team. Questions? Member Chani? Member Michele? Anyone else? Member Harris in that way?
Thanks, sir. I just want to check what is the situation now with regard to rental of premises. Public Works now paying or transferring funds to yourself, or are you still in the same situation like it was 2 years ago? And second question, I can see your report this time is very brief on details. It's not even consistent. But nevertheless, what is the situation in terms of your expenditure? Have you overspent or underspent this financial year? And lastly, try to understand what is the purpose of that pie chart. Because you are indicating revenue for 2006, and then, I mean, 7-8, and then in terms of that pie chart of 7-6. If I read it on my own, what would be the relevance of that chart? Thanks.
For this specific financial year we're discussing now, did you submit a report in this fashion? I didn't see it. That's why McMahon-Bruchani made the remark.
We did send 750 copies to a sack of papers, which we would have hoped would have been distributed, okay, to Parliament.
Reach us, but okay. We're not going to solve it now. Although Michelle and Edmond will have it.
Thanks, Jefferson. I just wanted to take from the chairperson's comment that they have others that can fund trips or fund certain activities which you can't fund from your internal finances. Now, given the example you have raised that you are funded by Treasury to do something else or to go out of the country to make some visit, I just want to check whether there are no elements of conflict from those that fund you, whom they have to either deal with you as a working relationship that may be be viewed as a bribery or of some sort. If you could try to consider that. And then going past that to the page 14 that Comrade Chan has already raised, that how do you account for those expenditures that are paid by others, but for activities that are for the FFC? If 30,000 have been spent on commissioners of FFC to make an international visit for best practices, and when you come back, how do you account for those particular funds in your books? That's what I just wanted to know, if that happens. And then on page 8, it looks like you also have something to do with ethics issues, and as a chairperson for a standing committee on ethics in Parliament, I just wanted to check how you can be involved as FFC to make a contribution on a revised ethics document that we are trying to establish. Then if there is any way that you can also make an input, then we can make those particular engagements. Now, in the report on page 9, it looks like you are indicating that we should align with the FFC Act in terms of the chair of the audit committee. I would rather say we should align the FFC Act with what is happening now, which is acceptable. I think that's what needs to happen. And all what is left is that we must put up a date by which it should have influenced whoever has the responsibility to bring that amendment bill or whatever to actually correct the situation. It should be in your power to ensure that this particular situation is resolved within some 6 to 9 months from today, that we deal with it. Then it looks like you're raising a point on page 11 that you are making progress in terms of employment equity. One would be saying that this is there are good intentions why we brought the employment equity. Therefore, agencies that are of government definitely need to comply with this thing. And we really don't have to have excuses of not complying with it. Because before we expect private companies and the rest to comply, and then I think those that are attached and established by the legislation of Parliament, I think they need to lead the private sector in complying with this thing. We don't need to have queries from Jimmy Mani about FFC. I don't think we need to hear that. And the other thing is your procurement system. Is it an approved procurement system? And then we just need to ensure that that is the case. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mashira. Also welcome to Honorable Gundel. Please remember to sign the attendance register. Honorable Harris.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to support the co-chair. There's not enough detail in this document. We can't analyze the expenditure if you don't break it down like you did in the previous report. So I'm assuming from the reports following this one, we'll have that breakdown that we can analyze. And then secondly, Chair, it's a general request that I'm going to propose. Do you think it would be possible for this committee to request from the FFC, in line with the first point I made today, something of a, you could call it an effectiveness analysis on 1 year's division of revenue. So let's say we take the 2009-10 DORA and the FFC submission on it, we list the recommendations, just a simple 2 or 3 page report listing the recommendations, listing which ones were accepted by Treasury, which ones weren't, and their reasons. And then based on the quarterly reports that the Chair pointed out earlier, just a high-level analysis of the actual implementation of that recommendation. I understand that the Commissioner said there are constraints in terms of the oversight you can do, but like the Chair pointed out, the reports are available, the quarterly reports. And just as far as you can assess, if government said that it would adopt your approach, does that reflect in the numbers? So, I'm wondering if we could request a special one-off report just so we can see the effectiveness of this institution we're supporting here.
Anyone else? Any other members? You may reply.
Chair, thank you. I just want to make sure I understand the last question. We look at the DORA and then just see how far it goes down the line in terms of the intended purpose of it. Is that it?
Divided up by recommendation, so dealing with each recommendation at a time. Did Treasury accept it? Yes or no? And if not, why? If they did accept it, then is it being reflected in the actual expenditure of the provinces? And obviously, we don't expect you to go and do a whole lot of other oversight, but just in the figures that are available, does the expenditure reflect an actual adoption of your recommendation? I would imagine it can be done in a table of 2 or 3 pages.
No, thanks very much. Can you...
Just a rider to the one that Harris has raised. I'm interested to hear when a recommendation has been made by FFC and that recommendation is not taken by Treasury or the government. What happens to that recommendation? Because one understands that for FFC to make a particular recommendation, it will be informed by certain research. But now, if it is not taken at a particular time, what FFC does about it? Does it carry on with it and try and make more clarity in the following year, or it just drops it? I think it's just a matter of evaluation, monitoring evaluation of your own activity. Thanks.
The documentation we received last week in the lockup session. I'm not sure which volume document it is now, but the Treasury response to the recommendations made by the FFC. I picked it up. But we'll deal with that on Friday when we get the briefing.
Starting with the adoption of the Commission's recommendations. I think late last year we prepared a document for the standing committee on appropriations, where we have actually listed all the recommendations that the commission has made since its inception. What government's response was to those recommendations, and the state of implementation, as it were, okay, of some of those recommendations. So there is basically a document, okay, that speaks to some of the members' concerns about what happens, basically, okay, to the commission's recommendations. No, no, that is what I think we should do. Yeah.
What is it called, sir?
It's a summary, basically, of the Commission's recommendations for the past 15 years. Well, I can certainly state what the recommendation is, what the government's attitude was to the recommendation, and if accepted, what the state of implementation was. Okay. And the second thing is, we don't drop recommendations, okay, that the government has not accepted. We carry them through. As long as we believe that they are the correct recommendations, we'll keep on prodding, and they will keep on referring to them, okay? So they don't get lost anyway, okay? Yeah, they remain valid. Insofar as our procurement systems are concerned, our procurement systems, okay, are based on the legislation that is in place in the context of procurement government-wide, and our policies and procedures, okay, are drawn basically from that legislation. So in that particular respect, we're compliant 100%. In the context of employment equity, okay, the members' concerns about Jimmy Manye, okay, making some negative comments about the FFC. The last report that we got from the Director General of the Department of Labor was to the effect that we're making good progress in terms of the implementation of our employment equity plan. The next report is due October this year, okay, and I'm sure it's going to be better than the past one, which the Department of Labor commented on. Insofar as correcting the FFC Act about the audit committee chairperson, I quite agree with the member. It should be the other way around. We should be changing the Act, okay, to reflect the current best practice, okay, in this context. We will do it. In the context of ethics, yes, we've just finalized our code of ethics, and it's been adopted by the commission, and I'm sure we will be able to give whatever help that the honorable member and his committee would want to get from us. Funding, how it's reflected, okay, when we go, like for instance, to Rwanda, okay, with treasury. The money never reaches us. The money is a disbursement from a national treasury budget. We only take our cells and our luggage, okay, to Rwanda, okay, but the money never comes anywhere near the Financial and Fiscal Commission. Now, insofar as the rest of the questions, I think the CFO can respond to those.
Thanks, sir. To quickly add on that, I think as far as if there's any donor funding that we received, our annual report normally reflects that donor funding and also the details how that money was spent. Like if you can see, like on page 14, there was a donor funding that we received for intervention. That was specifically to deal with the CBMS model that was used by the research, and the details are in our annual report. According to Auditor General, we have to even if it was a donor funding, can't put exactly what was that donor funding, the purpose for it. We don't put it as part of our total expenditure analysis. And then coming to the question of that was raised by the Honourable Member with regard to the rental of our premises. Although we didn't receive any money from Public Works, either from Treasury, but we were asked by Treasury that within the allocation that we have of the budget, we have to make sure that we fit that rental of premises within that budget. It's something that we making allocation on within the given. But I think one of the things that we get additional funding of 5 million on next year is also to address some of those issues that we have. And also with regards to the expenditures, whether we still have a deficit in our books, we still, because it was rolling over to each and every, we still reflect that deficit, but is within the acceptable level of distribution, within less than 5% of the total expenditure that we have. And also we do have explanations of those items that we are running short of. And also with regard to, I think on page 14, I think it was the mistake then in terms of 2006 and 2007, it should be 7 and 8 there on the pie chart, but it just reflects how our revenue is being used, like 72% of our revenue, as indicated, is coming from the money that is being allocated by the government. In terms of the detailed analysis, okay, the details were put on the annual report that was presented, but you can even put more details as the honourable member is requesting. Thank you.
Any follow-up? Madam Shile?
The chair, the pie chart on page 14. Let me just say the page 14 content, it talks to foreign donations. That's why I had a problem with donations from locally or within the country. That is not reflected. And that funding to Uganda or Angola or whatever, I'm taking it for granted that it is a donation which is actually from within the country. Now, I'm not an accountant, but I just want to check whether are you not considering that trip as a normal accounting expenditure that you are hiding from your books, but you have spent money as FSC, because that trip was for FSC intentions, although it is funded or arranged by others, whether it should not be considered as a donation for that particular, you know, to be reflected. I don't know, I'm not an accountant, but I'm just seeing it as an expenditure line that has been hidden, but within the activities of FSC, because the people that have spent the money are the commissioners of FSC, and for the good of FSC.
Chair,
can I answer that?
Okay.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable. I think you're quite correct in terms of reflecting that expenditure. This slide on page 14 does reflect the revenue that we have received in terms of the money that we have received. But when it goes to expenditure, we do reflect that, because auditors normally check, although if we didn't receive the actual money, we normally say it's donation in kind. Yes, we normally reflect that.
Normal practice that it's been reflected like that, but you'll pick it up in Treasury's financial statements. Yes.
The kickoff, Chair, if I'm allowed, we take this trip because we are requested by the Treasury. It's not us initiating.
Yes, right now. Yes. Covered, Honorable Shile, Honorable Johnny, anything from your side? Any other questions? That covers then the annual report of the year 2007-2008. Our next engagement with the FSC will be when we will be going into the workshop that we agreed on the 16th of March. On the 16th of March, 10 o'clock in the morning, we will then again have a meeting with Dr. Shatai and his team, when they'll take us to a workshop on the tracking mechanisms on the spending of conditional grants and instruments and models used by the Commission. So thank you to Dr. Shatai and his team for presenting these historical reports to us today, and we will do our recommendations as well in our reports from the committee side. Honourable members,
just a few things before we adjourn this meeting. First, tomorrow and Friday is set aside for public hearings on the fiscal framework and revenue proposals that will be a joint meeting with the Standing Committee on Finance in E249. Now, tomorrow's meeting or the public hearing starts at 9 o'clock. 9:30, but it will be carrying on until late tomorrow afternoon. If I remember correctly, I think there's 9 organizations that will be coming to the public hearing, although Friday morning has also been set aside. Now you're going to ask me, what about caucus and plenary? We made a submission to the Chief Whip in the NCOP, referring to the committee work that has to be done in terms of the Moneyball Act, because there's a time frame. And we have been approved, it has been approved that we carry on with these hearings, that is, our members from the NCOP side, as well as the members from the Standing Committee on Finance in the NA. Approval by our Chief Whip in the NCOP and approval by the Chief Whip in the NA. So that is with regard to the caucus tomorrow morning, which in my case is ANC, and the other parties as well, because it comes from the Chief Whip. Secondly, there's a plenary tomorrow afternoon, 2 o'clock on education. I believe 96 minutes. We are not released from that plenary, so we will have to attend it. After the plenary, we will again join the public hearings in E249. That is regarding tomorrow. And Friday, the hearings will carry on. Monday morning is the 1st of March. Then we will sit on the deliberations and the consideration of the committee's report on the fiscal framework in revenue proposals. That is again a joint meeting. Approved that we carry on with this meeting, so I call on members please to be present at that committee meeting. It's crucial because it's our report that will be going to the NCOP, to the House. The time is 09:30 to 13 hours. Salani? Is it now 12 o'clock? 12 o'clock. Okay. But members will be notified by SMS. Thank you, Zulani. He's doing it every day. The afternoon, we will be departing and leaving for the Northern Cape to go on our oversight to the province. Now, in your black envelope, you received documentation this morning, that is the research documents on the municipalities that we will be visiting. The program has also been distributed, Solani. The program, please inform the members what they still will receive from your office.
Thanks, Chair. We are finalizing the travel arrangements today. Then the travel agents were hoping at least by tomorrow, latest in the afternoon, let's say after lunch, will provide us with everything that members require, accommodation, the flights, and so forth. That's why I'm seeing the program are also packages on those things. Yes.
Can I propose that we release the SSC if they would like to go?
We still have a meeting through lunch.